Welcome to All the Smoke, a production of The Black Effect and iHeartRadio in partnership with Showtime.
Welcome back, season two, All the Smoke from our beautiful New York location. Excited about today's guest, someone I really look up to in this space, one of the strongest black voices to me in the country, Charlamagne.
Matt,
the God.
Thank you, bro.
Appreciate your time. Thank you for having me, man.
Exactly.
You know
what's happening?
You know, I love all the smoke. I love when I get this opportunity to actually be on shows that I actually
fuck with.
Listen to and fuck with. You know what I mean?
That's how we feel about Breakfast Club.
That's only right.
We'll get into how we really working together later, but let's get into it, man. The climate of America is on the brink of changing. I think it's finally reared its naked head, and people are starting to realize that there's some real issues here. What is your just thought of where we're at as a society right now?
I think wherever we're at, it's no going back. I'm one of them dudes that first voted in 08 when President Obama, you know, was in the White House, and I'm gonna be honest, I only voted for him because he was black.
Right.
He was black and he was cool. He had the culture, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think right now a lot of us are more politically sophisticated, and we understand that you have to have the right people in office to make certain things happen, you know. And I think those rose-colored glasses that we all wore when Barack was in the White House, that's over.
Yep.
Like, I don't care if it's Joe Biden and Senator Harris, whoever's in there, we're not just going to be in love with them because they're in there. You know what I mean? That's not where the change comes. The change comes is continuing to push once they get in the White House. So I think wherever we're at in this country, there's no going back because both sides have been exposed, right? Like, we've been to it's not all sweet. And now the other side definitely knows it's not all sweet. But then we also know that there's a whole other side
fighting it hard.
That don't
everything
want
is fine.
To change.
What are you talking about? Exactly. What are you, all this shit you're talking about?
Exactly.
What are you talking about? That's what trips me out is we've been able to wake some people up and heighten their senses and step outside of themselves and be vulnerable to try to understand the pain that the black community goes through. But there's a lot of people that feel like we're crazy for even addressing this. And what are we talking about? And it's all bullshit.
Why would they want to relinquish that kind of power?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, they got power, they got privilege. Why would they want to relinquish it?
Mm-hmm.
We definitely gonna have to fight for that.
Right.
I kind of honestly feel like we're gonna be in this spot until Indian and black blood have a fingerprint on the Constitution, how this country is actually ran, because the president only can do so much.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And then again, I don't believe in voting for the lesser evil. Evil is evil. You know what I'm saying? And if we understand that the system is built for us to be in this position and still fighting to this day, then we have to have a say-so how it's ran.
Right.
And that's really the only way we're going to stop this shit. You know what I'm saying? Because a lot of times, like I said, we vote for people that we don't that have histories of hating us.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? So what kind of situation is that? You know what I'm saying? We vote for somebody who we know hate us.
Yeah.
It don't make no sense.
The way I kind of look at that situation, though, I mean, since we're here now, I think as a black community, we ask people to understand and try to grow if you were a certain way. So the first thing everyone points out is Biden's track record. And by no means am I justifying anything. This is just kind of just the way I kind of look at it. We look at his track record, and you could definitely say he was against the black community.
Yeah, 86 mandatory minimum sentencing, 88 crack laws where you got more time for crack and coke, 94 crime bill, like, yeah.
So you can definitely, like,
black community.
Yeah, right. So for him to say anything other to me, you're right, I made a mistake. That's what I want to hear.
That's it.
And then to me, but also, like I said, so the way I'm looking at it is his track record, he's quick to look at your track record ain't shit. I'm just going to be honest with you. But to me, it's just like, can he possibly change? Can he possibly see through a different lens? Did being with Barack for that amount of time rub off on him? So we're looking at someone who can possibly have changed where he came from. On the other hand, we know who who the current president is, what he's about, what his makeup is, who his base is. So to me, it's just like people say the lesser two evils, and I would agree to an extent, but I'm looking at someone who can possibly have changed, and if he's in office, he's going to have to prove that he changed because he realized he could be gone after one term if he's able to make it, or are we picking someone who we know who he is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't even look at Joe Biden as a change agent. I look at him as a pathway to change because I honestly feel like
keeping the seat warm.
Old white male leadership, that ain't the pathway to change no more. Mm-hmm. Old white male leadership got us in this position.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? From the inception of how this country was put together, it was built for this old white male patriarchy. Mm-hmm. And everybody else was considered secondary, third, fourth. So I don't look at either one of them as change agents. I definitely don't look at Biden as a change agent. I definitely don't look at Trump as a change agent. But I think Biden is a pathway to change.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And like you say, talking about forgiving, let me go back to that. Because you know how they do us. We could be on TV.
That's right.
All the stuff we doing right now.
That's right.
We got a great show. All the stuff I'm doing in the community. But as soon as I get on CNN, the first thing they do is talk about the brawl.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? But they want us to forgive. That's right. It don't work like that.
That's right. That's why I personally don't give a fuck about criticizing Joe Biden. People be like, you shouldn't criticize Joe Biden. You're going to ruin his chances. F all that. Like, why can I not critique him, call out his flaws, mm-hmm. call out his record, and still vote for him?
Right.
Like, what kind of world do we live in where I'm supposed to just, shy, just be quiet? That's literally, it's like, you're telling people to shut up and vote the way people tell athletes to shut up and dribble. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not going to shut up and vote. I'm going to vote based off my interest, and I'm going to call out the things I don't like. And if you put some things on the table that I do like, hey, I rock with that.
And you saying forgive this person, but you got a cousin that took $2 from you that you grew up with your whole life, but you ain't forgave him yet.
That's not right. One time.
You ain't forgave him yet.
Still mad at him.
$2.
Still mad at him. Pivoting a little bit to the social justice movement, you know, I kind of feel like when Kobe passed, it's been a domino effect of negative things to happen since then.
I go back to Nip.
Before the March.
Life ain't been the same.
Right.
I ain't gonna lie. I feel Talk like there was a glitch it. In the matrix after that.
Yeah.
Shit just been going like
down. That's a great point. You know, so we get to the pandemic. And then we get to the George Floyd situation, which, you know, my man right here was front
Absolutely.
And center for
front
one
line.
Of the biggest, or if not the biggest, protest in the history of our country. What was your take from all that when that George Floyd video hit?
Man, I remember exactly where I was at because I was trying to avoid it. And the reason I was trying to avoid it, because I think sometimes, man, we just pass trauma amongst each other. You know, you be mm-hmm. on social media and it's another video of it's a video of this person, a video of that person. It's just like, damn, who are we trying to prove? We know what's going on in our country.
Yeah, like, you get tired of looking at it.
Yeah, the other side needs to see that. And I remember my homegirl called me. It was Tiffany Haddish. She called me and we was on the phone and she was telling me about it and she was crying. I'm like, man, I'm trying to avoid it. And as I'm watching CNN, the video pops up. Mm. So I was forced to look at it. And I think that the reason that video was so impactful is because of that exact reason. A lot of us that know what's going on, we can avoid it. A lot of white people can definitely avoid it because that ain't even their world at all. But when we were forced to be still because of that coronavirus and we sitting at home and we got to watch that 8 minutes and 46 seconds, man, when I saw that, my immediate thought was I felt defeated. And the reason I felt defeated because I'm like, man, if this black man can be out in broad daylight, this cop's kneeling on his neck, I'm watching all the other brothers and sisters around just feeling hopeless. You know what I mean? Not knowing what to do in that moment. I know they want to help. I know they want to react, but they don't want
right.
to end up dead. It's just like, I felt defeated. I'm like, what do we do? And then when I saw everybody start tearing shit up and burning shit down, I'm like, what other reaction did you expect from people? Like, it's only but so much
a
community of people can take.
Especially in the city where it's been going on. A lot of people didn't even know that.
Well, I say when the George Floyd situation hit, unfortunately, when we've, like you said, we've become so immune to it, we see police brutality, it's a shot and kill. We saw for nearly 9 minutes a man suffer and beg and plead and call for his dead mom. You know what I mean? Man. Like, I think that having to see, like you said, having to see that because the world was still is the reason that the light came on and some people said, but then at the same time, instantly he did this and his past is this and he was resisting and he was doing all this and he, you know, he had underlying, like, the, I mean, even the coroner came out and gave, you know, a bullshit, you know, an autopsy result. So it's crazy that even when it's on your face in front of your children to your grandmother and everyone can see it, you still try to deny shit.
Yeah, it was the lack of empathy for me. It was just the lack of empathy of watching that devil have his knee on the brother's neck. And no, you mean to tell me not one other officer had the empathy to be like, yo, man.
Just for a second.
Just for like, a second. Come on, like, man. God damn, not one.
Until you seen the other interview, I mean the other view, where they go on the other side of the court and all of them
and
on top of them.
All of them on top of them. It's like, yo, what faith are we supposed to have as black people in this system? Mm-hmm. Like, seriously. Like, that. I can't remember the young lady name, but when she said they should be lucky black people just want equality right. and not revenge, that mm-hmm. is a very powerful statement mm-hmm. to make, because it's the truth. Mm-hmm. Like, we should all just be tearing this shit up mm-hmm. based off the history that we, based off what we've gone through in this country.
And then the first thing they want to point out is the fact that things are getting torn up, but they never want to talk. Well, like, well, why is it getting torn up? Why are they doing that? Are they just wild animals? That's the way they want to paint us and act, but... Let's address why they're frustrated. Why did Kentucky board up the downtown before they gave yep. the result of the cops? Yep. Because it wasn't because they knew. Why did they tell the cops not to go on vacation and stay? Like, because they knew they weren't going to serve justice. Mm-hmm. Like, let's look at the root issue of why this other shit is happening.
I loved it too, though, because it activated so many people in our community. Like,
of all colors.
Man, when I saw Steven and Trey and Tamika at that press conference, man, I'm just like, wow. You know, and I know that it was people telling you to stand down. Yeah. They're like, oh, Steven, you good. You got billions yeah. of dollars. What you care for?
Yeah, yeah.
But what was that like, though?
But they, I mean, you know, I didn't pay no attention to it. You know how I am. Mm-hmm. You know, I've always been my brother's keeper. You know what I mean? And like I said, that's the closest person I consider my twin ever in my life. You know, even though we wasn't real brothers. But I did for him what I do for any one of my brothers.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But if it called for me to go stand up and use my voice and my status to speak up, for justice, for anybody, you know, I was gonna do it, head up, chest out.
But what was it like for you? You've been a leader in locker rooms and on the floor, but what's it like being a leader for a culture, for a movement, for something that was, the country has never seen, the world has never seen?
I just lead with my heart, bro. Just try to do what I know is right, you know what I'm saying? I treat everybody the same. You know, I don't have a history of racism. I don't have a history of hate towards nobody. So I walk it how I talk it, you know what I mean? I wear my emotions on my sleeve. And what you see is what you get with me. But at the same time, I know I don't have all the answers.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I know, just like we talked about, I might not see what I'm fighting for.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? But as long as I know I had a hand in it, you know what I'm saying? I know I'm living, my death is going to be worthy.
How do you feel, even though you are doing what's right, you're met with so much pushback, resistance, death threats?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how does that, because I'm sure you've probably faced it. You're very vocal in space. I know
I've faced
it. I'm numb
to death threats at this point, especially on social media.
Yeah.
I get them so much. It's just like, oh, okay, you want to see me dead? I can literally tweet out, thank you, God, for blessing me with another day of life, and somebody be like, I was praying you died.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, mm-hmm. every day.
That's crazy.
That's crazy, right? But what they don't know is, when they do stuff like that, you just showing how much you dying inside.
Mm-hmm.
You're showing how miserable your life is.
But how powerful we are. And then they see, like Charlamagne said, why would they ever want to give that away?
Yeah.
Because they see us. They've done everything they possibly can to keep a whole community, a whole set of people down. We continue to climb the ladder.
But that's because we divine, though. I always say that. Like, when I be speaking about black privilege, right? And you know, people hear me say that. And they're like, oh, there's no such thing as black privilege. But I'm not talking about something systemic. I'm talking about something spiritual.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I really do feel like it's a privilege and an honor to be in this black skin. And I feel like where their power lies systemically, our power lies spiritually.
Mm.
And I feel like that's why things are shifting now.
Mm-hmm.
Because... I'm not going to say for the first time, but for the first time in probably a long time, it's the collected mindset of black people saying, no, something has to change.
Yeah.
And they're putting energy towards that and speaking it into the universe. And it's just like things are literally shifting around us systemically.
Right.
Now we're getting a chance to really get like some systemic change happening. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a beautiful thing. At the end of the day, when this year is over, we're going to look back and be like, that was the year, that was the catalyst to change.
You know, I face a lot of kickback personally because I'm biracial. You know, my mom is Italian, my dad is black, and people are like, well, how are you so this, and that? Because I've seen the good and bad on both sides. I've got it. Growing up, I was never white enough. I was never black enough. So I've seen the good side and bad side from both sides. But there was an incident in high school that KKK came and damn near burned my high school down. And that's when I realized, like, no matter how proud I am to be biracial, like, I'm looked at as a black man.
You and that's look how pure nigga to me. 100%. I never knew he was biracial until you said it.
Oh, hey, if you meet his dad, you'd be like, yeah, you 100% nigga. You meet his daddy, bro. His daddy out the chain.
2:15 in the morning, that's how purple he is.
Yeah.
But people don't understand, like, what are you talking about? You're half white. I'm just like, you're right. And I'm very proud to be that. But in this world, you're not, as a biracial person, you don't get a choice. They make it for you. Like, Obama's biracial.
Yeah.
But what is he? Our first black president.
Yeah.
Right.
You know what I mean? So if you get a drop of black in you, that's what you are, and people have a hard time, even from the black side. You ain't black.
Yeah.
Like, all right,
yeah.
You got me. You know what I mean? So it's just like there's a lot of inter battles amongst the bigger battles that need to kind of cease and understand, man, if we come together as black and brown and then all of our other allies throughout the rainbow of colors, we can really make a change. But that's the only way we're going to do it. It's not just going to be basketball in the bubble. It's not just going to be celebrities. It's going to take all of us together to change something we didn't create in the first place.
Right.
Do you feel like a sense of privilege?
Me?
Yeah.
Never.
Never, right? It's
never have I. And people, well, you're rich because I worked my motherfucking ass.
Just with the ladies.
But people, like you said earlier, like, Jack, stand down, you're rich. Like, people, that's the first, when you got money, you don't feel like, but we came from this. We came from food stamps. We came from sharing bedrooms. We came from moving. I came from drugs and drug abuse and violence and, you know, all that kind of shit.
I mean, privilege from the white side, though,
because
the police.
No, because I never, I wouldn't say privilege. I get lucky because I play basketball sometimes, so they'll recognize that side. But as far as just, nah.
Because regular everyday life, a police officer can't tell that you half white.
Like,
he don't and don't care.
Right. Don't give a fuck.
You
know?
Right.
If you tell him that, he probably be like, we got somebody here on drugs right now. Can we send more? Send backup, please.
What do you feel like the NBA's role has been in the bubble? And did you kind of like the idea of them going back, or did you think they shouldn't have?
I like the idea until Steven made me think twice about it when he said. You know what I'm saying? I was all for it until I saw Steven say, man, they don't need to come back. We need to, you know, this is a chance to get some real change. And I was like, damn. So that was a whole nother conversation that started. Should they go back? Should they not go back? And I felt like they should have went back because I knew eventually the news cameras were going to go away from the protest.
Right.
And being that I knew the news cameras were going to go away, we needed those brothers on that stage
continuing
to do exactly what they're doing.
Continuing
to push. You know what I mean? To keep that conversation going. They did. LeBron did. And I heard you say it on, I think it was the first episode of All the Smoke, where you was talking about how the little known players.
The lesser known. Just the lesser known
players. They didn't have a voice.
We wouldn't have heard. We wouldn't have heard them.
Exactly. But now when they speak at that bubble, it resonates.
NBA, NBA logo. And that was my only push. And Jack and I, you know, agreed to disagree and both saw points on both sides because we were on opposite spectrums. Like, I thought just what you said. Like, their voice is much stronger. It's going to resonate. It's going to go around the world when they have the NBA logo behind it. Individually, we're going to hear LeBron, we're going to hear CP, but do we hear Doc's plea? Do we hear George Hill's plea? Do we hear Fred VanVleet? Like, we don't hear these other pleas if we're not together in that bubble. What do you feel like now that we're coming to an end to keep the momentum going that the NBA in particularly can do to keep this message going?
To be honest with you, I'm not sure outside of, like, real donations into the black community. Like, I saw the number that they put up. I think it was like $300 million over 10 years. That ain't shit for the NBA.
But then how do we know where it's going?
For
30
exactly.
owners, like, that's my thing is I think the owners should step up because, to be honest with you, a lot of these owners are on the exact opposite side of where their players stand. The exact opposite side. And when you're an owner, you're a billionaire, you have these connections to be able to start conversations, open up dialogues in whatever political avenue you're in. You know what I mean? So I just think it's more of, because a lot of them didn't want to talk. There are some that went out of their way to talk. There's a lot of coaches that went out of their way to talk, but a lot of them kept their mouth shut and sat on their hands. You know what I mean? So to me, it's more about align with your players, understand what your players are talking about, even if you may not completely agree, but just have this conversation. And we need the owners and players to come more together. And you hit it on the head. $300 million sounds like a lot to the average people, but over 10 years, if you think about it, these owners are playing their two-star players over $300 million. You know what I mean? So it's not for 30 people to come up. I think it's a great start, but I think it's not enough, and we have to continue to keep pressure on them because their arenas are in these predominantly poor cities, and people have to budget a whole month's salary to go to a game and take a family and to get food and to buy merchandise and that kind of stuff. So
I like Robert Smith's 2% plan where he wanted all of these top corporations to put 2% of their net income into black-owned banks because then the black-owned banks could take care basically of the community. People can go there and get loans, house loans, whatever it is.
That's dope.
That's something the NBA should commit to, because a lot of these problems that we have in these communities can be fixed by people with money. They don't gotta wait on government. So they should be talking. And I also think the NBA needs something kind of like the NFL has with the Inspire Change thing. You know what I mean? Like the thing Roc Nation them is heading. Like, they need somebody to dictate where that money goes. Like, give it to the brothers that's already on the ground doing things.
And it's not necessarily a big name. Some of these big name corporations are just sucking money away, and it's not. We don't have no. But get in touch. You should have like a city leader in every city that you trust, or some kind of liaison that tells you, like, yo, that group over there is really doing something for that. That group over there is this. So let's allocate. Let's throw them $3 million. Let's throw them $7 million. You know what I mean? So to really know where the money is, because until you're walking, because every neighborhood is different. Houston's problems and Atlanta's problems are different than the problems in Sacramento and Oakland. You know what I mean? So you have to be in tune with who's in these cities to see which programs best fit and best work in these cities. But there needs to be transparency on where this money is definitely going. I thought the NBA did a great job of keeping the players safe first and foremost, with being in the bubble and being tested and doing a great job at that. And then you see this administration, reckless, maskless, calling it a hoax, making fun of whatever, and now the president has it. Like, what kind of irony is that?
I don't think that's irony. I think he earned it. I think he earned it, and he got exactly what he deserved. Like, if you're going to throw your middle finger to something and act like it doesn't exist, that's usually the thing that punches you right in your face. And that's what happened with COVID.
And what did he say when he got the number of how many people died? It is what it is?
It is what it is.
It is what it is.
And so you cannot feel bad for people feeling like that towards him. Now, I'm the type of person, I don't wish death on nobody.
I don't wish death on him at all.
But I don't even believe he really got the shit. He would have to die in order for me to believe that he really got it. I'm being honest with you, because it's October. We got that whole October surprise thing going on. And
you saw someone tweeted maybe 2 weeks ago, this is going to be, I posted it the other day, this is going to be Trump's October surprise. He's going to be sick and he's going to dominate the headlines for 2 weeks on how hard he's working with these fake pictures of him working and scribbling his name on it.
Absolutely.
The gimmicks are incredible.
And it might be a cash-out plan, right? If he know that he leaving in November, right? He know he getting voted out. He might have an investment into the pharmaceutical company.
Ooh.
And he's out there telling people he's taking these experimental cocktails. I saw the stock shoot up for, it's something with an R. I can't
Bleach?
Remember. Nah. It's something with an R. I can't remember the name of the pharmaceutical company, but it shot up 2% after he told everybody he took this experimental cocktail. And they from Queens. He from Queens. The people, the founders of the company. I don't know. That's just how I be thinking.
He's always had
a mean conspiracy.
He's always had a mean hustle to me. Before this presidency and before he kind of showed his head or whatever hand he's had to play to get to where he's at, he's always had a mean. He hasn't always won, but he's always been a mean, hustling, business having.
He's trying to benefit. He got a motive in everything he's doing, bro.
Yeah. What role would you like to see the black community play? Not only amongst us coming together, but on the federal level and then the state level of power.
We need more black people wanting to be a part of that system. You know what I'm saying? Because even though I think the whole system needs to be overhauled, everything, I think they need to start over. We need to write a whole new constitution, Bill of Rights, everything, because we were not at that table when those things were initially written. But until we can do that, we got to have people that are in these positions of power, and we have to empower them in order to be able to give them the strength they need to stand up to that system. Because what happens is a lot of us get in those positions, and we just go along to get along. You know what I'm saying? We're not trying to rock the boat too much. It's just like, so what's the point of you being there?
Right.
We don't need black faces, you know, in those spaces just because. I want you in there because you care about our interests. So I would encourage, like, when I see Scarface running for political office in Houston, I like that.
Yeah, I want to do some shit like that, yeah.
I know you want to run for mayor. I want to see Killer Mike get in the politics. Yeah. I want to see people that I know have our interests at heart get involved. Now, a lot of us might be scared because we know them background checks is crazy. But who cares? You know what I'm saying?
So it is, though.
So it is.
Background's crazy, too.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So I just want to see more of us in those positions of power, and I want them to know that we got their back and we're empowering them to really show up as their full selves. That's really the biggest thing, right?
You're right, because that's been our biggest problem. We scared to get behind our brother. And even though we know any going direction, we scared to get behind it because we want to lead instead of just following him and being a team player. That's our biggest problem.
I always say you can get way more done when you stop worrying about who get the credit for it.
Right.
I mean, that's a Doc Rivers thing. Be a star in your role. I mean, everyone has a role to play. We all have a role to play, and together, you know.
We know who the leaders are. Like, when I see Tamika Mallory is my leader.
Yeah.
If you have to call yourself the leader, you're probably not the leader.
You're probably not the leader.
Everyone, if you have to give yourself a nickname, my nigga, that's not really your nickname.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, your nickname is...
I'm killer!
Right. Someone else is supposed... Because you're so dope at what you're doing is how you're supposed to be a leader or how you get these nicknames. So, anyway, so how do we get to this point? Your upbringing, your parents, Jehovah's Witness, your dad went from Jehovah to practicing Islam. What was that like growing up in a situation like that?
I mean, you know, when you're a kid, you don't really have no say it in the matter. You know, my grandmother's a Baptist, mom a Jehovah's Witness. My mom said, get up and it's time to go to the Kingdom Hall. It's time to go to the Kingdom Hall. When my dad gets this fellowship from the Kingdom Hall, he gets into Islam and he hands me the autobiography of Malcolm X. I read the autobiography of Malcolm X. When he hands me Message to the Black Man by Elijah Muhammad, I read Message to the Black Man by Elijah Muhammad. When he tells me to sit down and you're going to watch these speeches from Donovan and Phyllis Farrakhan, I sit down and I watch those speeches. It's really just about what sticks with you as you get older. And what I realize is, A little bit of all of it, dude. The stuff that Jehovah's Witnesses taught, it stuck with me. You know, except for the holidays. My wife and kids love the holidays. So we definitely do Christmas. But being a Muslim, Islam, like all of that stuff sticks. I don't really consider myself anything, but there's a little bit of everything from all of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You got to relearn yourself. You got to reteach yourself, too. A lot of stuff that I was taught as a kid, I don't believe now. Mm-hmm. Because as a man, an adult, I understand stuff differently. Mm-hmm. You know, so a lot of stuff was told
to you. You've seen a point of view.
But a lot of stuff was told to you as a kid to put a Band-Aid over some shit and not really give you the full understanding.
That's right.
But as you become an adult, some of those things you don't believe, you understand now.
I heard you say, I don't even know what show it was, if we were just talking off air. Blame it on the weed, not my heart. That you've learned more in this last 6-8 months than you remember learning your whole life.
Yeah,
like you educated yourself and made the effort to educate yourself.
Because I want to know what I'm talking about. You know, mm-hmm. I ain't never talked to you about going back to school and get my history degree. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm in the process of doing that because it sparked when bro died. It sparked something, and God put me in a position that I didn't ask for, like I always say. But it sparked something that was supposed to happen. And my heart is in the right place. Mm-hmm. So everything that I'm trying to do, I want to know what I'm talking about, right, and being educated about what I'm saying. Mm-hmm.
I feel the same way. I just know that I'm never going to be as smart as some people. Like, you hear Michael Eric Dyson talk.
Oh, yeah, nah.
You hear Killer Mike talk.
No.
You be like, hey, man, they just got it.
I just
want to... Some words that I never understand.
To me, my thing is just knowing what I'm talking about. I can't you know what I mean? Some people are blessed to be educated and be able to just spit that. Like, some of these rap, like Jay-Z is just very intelligent and can just put it out there.
I just want to have a proper understanding of things.
Right.
And even when we go back talking about religion, I remember when I started doing personal Bible study with one of the brothers at the Kingdom Hall. He would come to my mom's house and do personal study with me. And as I started to read the Bible for myself, a lot of it just didn't make sense. Like I say, Adam was the first man, Eve was the first woman. They had Cain, they had Abel. Cain kills Abel and goes off and finds a wife. Like, well, thought it was only four people on the planet.
Yeah,
what happened? You know what I mean?
It's a lot, bro.
And it's just like, I remember reading Deuteronomy 14:8. I think Deuteronomy 14:8 says, you should not touch the flesh of a dead pig, nonetheless eat it. And I remember asking the brother about that, because we from the South, we love pork. He's like, oh, if you pray over the food, you know, it's cool, it's good. So I'm like, but the Bible also says don't have sex before marriage. So if I pray over the pussy before I have sex with it,
Same.
Is that the same? He couldn't explain that as easy as he did the pork, though. I never understood it.
Yeah. It's really both pork. They both pork.
As a teen, you got in your fair share of trouble selling drugs, witnessed a shooting, got arrested, had to go to jail, and you sat down for 41 days.
Charlamagne had that pack?
Yeah, I mean, you know what it was? I was in high school getting in so much trouble, right? And, like, my dad is a street dude. Like, mm-hmm. he comes from that. Like, you know, my dad had his bouts with alcohol and mm-hmm. cocaine, but he also was a guy that was good with his hands, so he had his construction business as well, you know what I mean? So he had kind of, like, that balance. But he knew that the lifestyle I was living, he would always say, you're going to end up in jail, dead, uh-huh. or broke sitting under the tree. That was his thing to me. And so when I started getting in so much trouble in school, I got kicked out of two high schools. I got kicked out of Berkeley High School in Montclair.
What kind of trouble was it, though?
Like disruption, man.
Okay.
You know what I mean? You in class.
South Carolina.
You cutting up in class, clown, uh-huh. fighting, just doing dumb shit.
Whatever.
Like, mm-hmm. just dumb kid shit. Uh-huh. And so then they transferred me to Scranton because that's where my mom went to school at. And it's just like, that was around 16, 17. So then you start dabbling into other things. You know, you see your boy selling weed. You see your boy selling a little dope. And you're like, well, let me get into that.
Let me try to figure it out.
Absolutely. You know, and then I'm just the guy who hung around those guys for a while before I got involved. You know, but the first time I went to jail, one of my homeboys shot at somebody. And, you know, that whole no snitching thing. Right. So when they come to pick us up, it's just like,
man. All right.
So everybody got hit with an assault and battery with intent to kill charge. Mm. So everybody.
How old were you at that age?
I think 16, 17, because they came and got me from high school. And I was either repeating 10th grade. I think I was repeating 10th grade, so therefore I was supposed to be in 11th grade.
So they was looking at 11th grade classes.
Most motherfuckers say either I was in the 9th grade or 10th grade. It looks like either I was repeating 10th grade.
No. Once I got to high school, it was all bad. I failed 9th grade, then went to summer school, passed, went to 10th. Then fell 10th, and when I fell 10th, I think my pops was like, nah, you staying in 10th. So I stayed in 10th, because I was supposed to graduate in 96, I graduated in 98.
And same with me.
Oh, for real?
Yeah, I'm just regular.
I'm 96.
That's what I was supposed to graduate.
Oh, that was your class?
Yes, I'm 96. We're 96.
Oh, you're 96?
Yeah,
okay,
we're the same age.
Okay.
Yeah, Jack said he checked out in like 10th grade, too.
Yeah, I really checked out. I really checked out.
You didn't graduate high school?
Yeah, I graduated, okay, but okay. I checked out way before that, three years before that.
And you were playing ball?
It was all about hoop.
Yeah,
it was all about hoop.
It was ball and pussy.
The teachers was cool with it, though.
They didn't care.
Yeah, they was cool with it back then. Now they telling on you. They was part of the plan back then. They rocking with it. They want to see you make it.
Right.
Now they got their own motives.
What was the path that got you going into radio? How did you know that was your calling, or did it happen? You wanted it? How did it?
Honestly, man, radio was the first thing that I ever did in my life that felt constructive and positive. Ooh. Because before that, like, I was running the streets. The first time, you know, when you first get out of jail, you got to get a job, mm-hmm. right? So I worked at Industrial Acoustics Company. It's like a warehouse. Got fired from there in 2 weeks. Then I worked at a flower garden. I worked there for a week. That shit was modern day slavery. It was like me and a bunch of Mexicans out there. And I'm like, this ain't for me. Like, so I quit that after a week. And then I don't want to say modern day slavery either. I hate when people compare things to slavery. But it
wasn't for you.
It wasn't for me. Then I worked at a clothing store called Demo in the Mall.
I remember Demo.
Yep. And then I did telemarketing. So I was the guy that would call your house and try to sell you 10 CDs for a penny. So, and I worked at Taco Bell at one point. My sister, that's she fired me after 2 weeks. But I'm saying all that to say I wanted to do anything except for being in the street.
Right.
That's it. I did not want to be in the street whatsoever.
You say your sister fired you after 2 weeks?
After 2 weeks.
She was a manager?
She was the manager. She hired me and fired me after 2 weeks.
How much free Taco Bell did you get during that time?
Too much.
That's why you got fired. That's why you got fired.
Too much. The Taco Bell plug in high school was the lit.
But that's why I just wanted to do something positive. And I remember reading this acronym for PEACE, and it was positive energy activates constant elevation. So I knew as long as I'm out here doing something positive, things will grow. And then like most dudes in the hood, I wanted to rap. I'm clearly too short to want to play ball. So it's just like the people who I saw on TV that was successful that looked like me were usually in rap, mm-hmm. or athletic. So I started picking up the pen and writing. And I remember being in this recording studio. I met this guy named Willie Will. And he did local radio at Z93 Jams in Charleston. And I just asked him. I said, yo, how'd you get in the radio? He was like, I went down there and I got an internship. And I'm like, yo, is that easy? He was like, yeah. Now, this is 1998 in Charleston, South Carolina, so I ain't had to be in college and none mm-hmm. of that. And so that's what I did. I went down there and I got an internship. And like just being in that environment, mm-hmm. like the radio, you know what I mean? Watching artists come in and out and being at concerts and stuff. I'm like, this is what I want to do.
It sparks up.
That's
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
This is what I want
to
do.
When did you come to New York? How old were you then?
2006. Came to New York for the first, well, not the first time. I had been to New York once before. I didn't get on a plane until I was like 21 years old, 21, 22 years old. I don't even remember when that was. I remember I came up here because my people's Never So Deep Records, Dr. Robert Evans, his son Bless, they had a record label called Never So Deep. So they was up here mixing records, and I flew up here with them for one weekend. But then to live up here, I came here in 2006. And that's because Wendy Williams and her husband, they were looking for a co-host I didn't even know. And I happened to be up here with them for a party, and she invited me on her show. And I was on her show for like 20, 25 minutes. And literally that night, they was offering me her co-host slot. But he was like, yo, we can't pay you. We can give you a place to stay. I'm like, shit, I'm making $8 an hour in Columbia, South Carolina right now. I might as well make that move to New York and see what happens. And that's what I did. I worked with her for a year and a half for free.
How was that?
Mm-hmm. It was the best and worst time of my life.
Learned a lot, I'm sure.
Learned a lot from her just because she's such a great radio personality, such a great media personality. But I also learned how not to treat people when you are in that position that they were in. You know what I'm saying? I always say that was the best and the worst experience of my life. Because, yeah, they were terrible to people. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you hear that, and I wonder, because I don't know and I don't like to judge, but you hear that about Ellen and how she had to do a whole makeshift with her crew behind the scenes because people said they weren't treated right. So it's that kind of stuff used to fly under the radar, but that shit's not flying no more.
And it's a good position to be in now, though, because once you call somebody like Ellen out, the only apology is change behavior. Mm-hmm. So now her staff probably getting car services and bonuses. And
can I help you? Do you need something?
Rose petals being thrown on the floor as they walk, all types of stuff, because that's the only way that she can rectify it.
Prove it. So you had a learning experience with Wendy, which catapulted you a few years later into the Breakfast Club. How did that whole, how did you and Envy come together?
Well, I got fired from Wendy November of 2008. That was just because, like, the economy was in the toilet. So, like, everybody was getting fired. Like, I got fired on November 2nd. And the reason I remember that, because President Barack Obama became president-elect on November 3rd. So I got fired November 2nd. They fired, like, 30 people. So I was cool with that, even though I had too much pride to go collect unemployment. You know what I mean? My wife was working at the time, so she was holding it down with the bills and stuff. And then my daughter, my first daughter, was born June of that year. So I was just a stay-at-home dad. And then I got put on the radio in Philly, like, around May of 2009. And so I worked in Philly for like 8-9 months and got fired again. Mm-hmm. And that time I went home. I was like, man, I said, this city shit ain't for me. I'm going back to South Carolina. We all packed up, me, my now wife, my first daughter. We went back to South Carolina. I stayed there for a year. But prior to that, I always had kept in touch with my man G-Spin, you know. And G-Spin was the assistant program director at Power 105 at the time. And he was the one that kind of like, he had bought Envy in. He had me on the radar. And then he was telling Cadillac Jack, who's another mentor of mine, just about us constantly. And so it literally meant I was in New York for the summer once, and that the summer of 09. I remember hitting up G-Spin like, yo, I'm in town. He was like, yo, come to the station right now. So I went to the station. And when I went to the station, he was like, yo, my boss, Cadillac Jack, he been in here watching your videos all morning. Because me and Duval was doing the Hood State of the Union, which was like a web series that we would do. We would just talk about topics, you know, this before podcasts, so that's what we was doing.
Right.
And Cadillac was like, yo, man, you know, we had this whole conversation. He actually asked me about Wendy's husband, because I had had a meeting with them before, and Wendy's husband was with me. And when, unbeknownst to me, when we had left the meeting, everybody that worked in that building was like, yo, you cannot hire Charlamagne if Wendy's husband is his manager.
Oh, really?
That guy is bad news, right? So I remember him saying to me, is that still your manager? And I said, no. He said, why? I said, because when I pray to God to take negativity out of my life, he's not swinging at things. He's swinging at people that are the embodiment of that negativity. And I'm like, and he was like, oh, okay. And then he was like, yo, how long can you wait for this job? And I'm like, for this? Whenever the opportunity presents itself.
Right.
And then, like, I think we started November of that year. And that was 2010.
You guys are 10 years deep now, right?
Yeah. Next month will be 10 years. Yeah, or whenever they say, I don't know when it's the end, but yeah, November will be 10 years.
Who were some of the most memorable interviews you had from the beginning to up to current?
Man, that's such a broad question, because I really sat down in front of people that I never thought I'd be sitting down in front of. You know what I'm saying? I've been doing radio 22 years.
Mm-hmm.
When I sit back and I think about when I first started, you know, I've sat down with Senator Hillary Clinton. And
Senator.
Sat down with the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan quite a few times. I sat down with Dick Gregory, you know, Angela Bassett. Like, stuff like that freaks me out. Like, that's Angela Bassett. Like, I don't know how everybody else feel about her, but me, I'm like, yo, I sat down with Magic Johnson. Like, I got to ask Magic about catching HIV. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and asking him a question that I've always thought about, like, when you first got it, did you think about every little woman that you've been with throughout your whole life and be like, damn, I bet you it was a young lady from Sacramento? And he was like, hell yeah. That's, you know what
up.
I'm saying?
That's fucked up, he said Sacramento. No. Go ahead.
But it's just like, those conversations. Right. I never thought I'd be able to ask the stuff I've always thought about with people to them.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's just like, man, I can't sit here and say which one is more memorable, because sitting down with Lorenz Tate is memorable to me.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, sitting down with Nia Long is memorable to me. Just as memorable as sitting down with a Vice President Joe Biden or any of those ones that go viral. Like, you know what I mean? Like, all of these people mean something to me in various ways.
Was there a person or a time you felt kind of like, damn, I just interviewed so-and-so, like, I feel like I've made it now? Was there a time, like, that light came on? When did you feel like you had made it?
No. Because, you know, we live in such a fast-paced world, you're only as good as your last conversation.
Yeah, you don't have time to sit really.
So it's just like, well, I'm supposed to just sit back and be cool because Hillary Clinton talked about hot sauce? It's like, nah, what's next? Mm-hmm. And then literally, you know what's so crazy? That week, that Hillary Clinton hot sauce thing was Monday. That Friday was Birdman, Put Some Respect on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like, that's the way it moves. It moves just that fast. Like, Hillary be your biggest interview on a Monday. Literally, that was our biggest interview ever on a Monday. And then Friday, no, this is really your biggest, like, numbers-wise, analytic-wise, this is your biggest interview ever. So it's just like, I don't know. I don't never feel like I've made it. I haven't got to that feeling. I did get to a place of worthy. I got to that place last December. You know what I mean? Just feeling like I'm worthy. Like, not dealing with imposter syndrome. Like, feeling like I'm right where I'm supposed to be because God wants me to be here.
Everything you get, you deserve.
Absolutely.
Yes, sir.
But I never felt like, you know, I've made it.
Who are some of the people you looked up to in this space or who have actually mentored you in this space?
Oh, man, so many. I mean, from afar, people like Petey Green. You know,
Petey Green.
You saw the movie. That shit was dope.
You know, there's a movie called Talk to Me that Don Cheadle played.
Classic. Yeah, that's classic movie, man.
And like Petey is what I think every black radio personality should be. You know, and he reminded me so much of me because he didn't have no formal training. Like, he was a voice in jail, you know? Like, that's how he basically got discovered and ended up getting put on the radio, you know? So it's just like him, the Tom Joyners of the world, because when it comes to the business of radio, those are the brothers that figured it out early. You know, they figured out that ownership part of it early. You know, Steve Harvey, Doug Banks, you know, Sway, Big Boy, Angie Martinez, Wendy Williams. Like, and the beauty of it, these are people, some of these people I've actually gotten a chance to get game from.
Right,
you know,
right.
Like, I in worked with Wendy for 3 years.
In your circle,
know? Angie,
right.
I talk to Angie Martinez now, often, you know. Big Boy, he works at iHeart. Like, me and him have conversations. Sway's always giving me game. So it's just like I learned from all of them. You know what I mean? Because they all paved the way for me to even be doing what I'm doing.
You mentioned ownership, which I love. You've recently teamed up with iHeart and created Black Effect. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us what that's about?
Yeah, the Black Effect Podcast Network, man. It's like the audio business is booming, you know? And I've been with Breakfast Club for 10 years, but I've been doing my own podcast, The Brilliant Idiots, for like 6 years, you know? So I had a 10% ownership stake in a podcast network called Loudspeaker. You know, so I've been watching, you know, just the inner workings of the podcast game from that perspective for a long time. And then, you know, when you sit back and you start seeing Bill Simmons doing what he's doing with The Ringer, and you see what Gimlet is doing, and you see what Anchor is doing, you see what Barstool is doing, you sit back and you're like, well, why there's no black network like that? You know what I mean? You got these networks that have black shows, but what is the network that's like majority
for
owned?
Us.
Black and is really paying attention to what's going on in our culture and really knows the voices that needs to be
amplified.
You know, amplified. It's just like, let me build that. So that's where my mind has been for like the past 3 or 4 years. And I knew my contract was up in December. I think I put myself in a position to where they would want to negotiate with me. Yeah. You know, I think I got a little bit of, as Diddy calls it, black leverage.
Right.
You know, so I was like, look, man, you know, I don't want to be talent. Like, you know, y'all already know I'm in this podcast space. You know, I'm going to take this somewhere. So let's figure it out.
Yeah.
You know?
Nice love you.
And they was with it. It was not, no hesitation. Like, literally no hesitation. So we created this whole other company called the Black Effect Podcast Network. I'm majority owner of it, you know, along with iHeart. And it's enabling me to use their resources and their finances to invest in us.
And I love it, too, because like we said, with the allocation of the NBA money, they need to be able to work with pillars in those communities.
Absolutely.
You're a pillar of our community. So like you said, you're able to use iHeart's resources and all the amazing shit that comes with iHeart to help focus on us and help grow us. And, you know, I'm excited to obviously have All the Smoke as a partner.
Man, I'm so happy that y'all partnered. I remember when they hit me and they was like, yo, we might have a chance to partner with All the Smoke. I'm like, do it. I'm like, do it. Give them whatever they want.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And it was like, same thing, black leverage, because y'all got numbers. Ain't no, like, they can't front on y'all. They can't tell y'all what they think y'all should get.
The numbers don't lie.
There's a market value, and you either got to meet that or don't.
We know what we work.
We appreciate it, man. Now, like I said, we obviously, Showtime. Shout out Showtime.
Shout out to Showtime.
But yeah, now iHeart and Black Effect, we're proud to be a part of that family, too. You know, you and I talk once a week on just strategizing and how can, the first thing I told when we got over there. I was like, bro, I want to help you really grow this shit. Like, you know, I'm not just a talking head on a podcast. Like, let's. Like, they put someone in control now that really has a pulse for our culture. So that made me excited. Like, that gave me hope. Like, okay, here we come. And I hit him the other day. I was like, what do you think about a black bar stool? And he's like, shit, that's what we're trying to.
That's what
you just said at the hotel when we was on the elevator. You called him the black Ben Simmons. Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons,
yeah.
Because
yeah,
I told you about to cash out like Bill did.
I told Matt, I'm like, yo, that's what I see All the Smoke eventually being.
He wants us to give us a little. Let me tell him.
Yeah, I want to see All the Smoke have all the smoke needs is its network.
It's a whole lane.
Where they just rolling out those voices in sports that are like y'all. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like there's a, and only y'all know that. Mm-hmm. Only Matt and Steven know who those other voices are that are like y'all. Like they, those guys that are cut from that cloth.
They attract to us.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That, like that's why this show works. Plenty sports guys have gotten together and done shows, but we ain't never seen sports from a real nigga perspective.
Right. Never.
And that's just the truth to the matter.
I've also liked that you've been for a while, like you said, you've had your podcast, you've dabbled in TV with productions. You have the Emerging Hollywood on YouTube. One thing that I thought was really dope, though, because we've been hearing your growth and your evolution as not only a black man, but a businessman as well. But one thing that touched me was the Wi-Fi situation that you provided. Was it in Columbia?
Yeah, Columbia, South Carolina. Yeah.
Talk to us about that, because that shit, just like, that was so dope.
Yeah, my man, Mayor Stephen Benjamin, you know what I'm saying? Salute to Steve Benjamin, black man, Columbia, South Carolina. That's why local politics is so important, because I can't pick up the phone and get to the president, you know what I mean? But I'm from South Carolina. Mm-hmm. I've lived in Columbia. My wife went to the University of South Carolina. I can pick up the phone and hit my man, Steve, and it's just a matter of like, yo, Steve, what does the city need right now? Because I usually do a book bag drive every year, and I've been doing that for years in my hometown of Monk's Corner, but that just didn't feel right this year. So I just reached out to Steve, and he was like, man, I'm so happy you hit me, and he introduced me to this company called Ignite Cities. And basically what Ignite Cities is doing is making sure that people have Wi-Fi in these various areas, you know? And it was just like, yo, this is how much it's going to cost, and they can make it happen. I'm like, that's easy, you know? So now that I did it, It gets the ball rolling on the city, because now the city looked kind of crazy. Like, man, we letting
someone came
one
in
of our citizens
outdo us.
So now the next round, they got to handle that. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, you know, that's why I don't really like to talk about things like that. But I realize it's just like why people stunt, right? People stunt and they get inspired. Right? Mm-hmm. You see somebody with a car that you want. You like, damn, I want that. You see somebody with a chain on, you're like, oh,
well,
I want
to do that now. Like I said, the fact that I saw you do that, I was going to ask you how, because I want to get to the point. Like, people don't understand, like, we're in a new, I mean, I have kids and we're on online school, and that shit is terrible. But I couldn't imagine if my kids couldn't get online and get their schoolwork done. You know, what'd you say? You saw kids trying to take Wi-Fi from Taco Bell or something? They were sitting right next to Taco Bell.
It was an article I read, and it was these kids, they was literally doing their homework at Taco Bell.
In the parking lot.
I've seen that. And Steven had Steve had already told me about it, man. Benjamin, so when I read that article and he told me, I was like, man, we gotta do this ASAP.
Right.
Like, let's get this done.
I need to, I'm trying to do that in Sacramento too, so I need to get that info. We're gonna talk.
Word.
How important has it been for you in your journey? Like I said, I just saying your praises, but how important has it been for you to empower the black voice, not only in your space, but in the athletic space, in the politics space, in the community space?
That's all I care about. Like, if I was an NBA player, I would definitely want to lead the league in assists more than scoring points. Like, that's all I care about. Like, literally, like, I've always, regardless of what platform I was on, whether it was Breakfast Club, whether it was my podcast, whether it was the shows I was doing on Viacom, like Uncommon Sense, like, I always want to give everybody else an opportunity. You know what I mean? Because I feel like that's how you live forever, right? Yeah. Eventually, your star is going to burn out. Eventually, people are going to get tired of seeing you front and center all the time. Mm-hmm. So what keeps you alive?
You know,
what keeps
you alive
is who you open the door for. When I look at guys like Jay-Z, like, look at all the fruit off Jay-Z's tree.
Dr. Dre.
Well, I mean, no, Rihanna.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, Rihanna and Kanye.
Yeah.
J. Cole, all the people like
that's
that.
What I'm saying, but Dr. Dre,
Dr. Dre is another person who got fruit from a tree. You know what I mean? Like, I want to be that. Like, you want to be that guy that you empowered.
But you're doing it in a new space, though, too. You're doing it in a new space. Yeah. Music has been, they've had their struggles, don't get me wrong, and they've been able to do it, but you're in this multimedia space that has been and still is dominated by a certain culture. So.
Yeah, I just want to do it for the things that I know I'm good at. Like, I'm good in the audio space. Mm-hmm. I'm good in the book world. You know what I'm saying? So being that I'm good in those spaces, I can provide opportunities in those spaces.
Right. That's what's up. This motherfucking interview has been going. This is probably this has been the most smooth interview we've done, just on pace, on beat, from thing to thing. It's been... It's flowing.
He even slid in a couple questions.
Yeah.
He been doing it.
You know, it's still in it. Shit, we're coming to the end. This shit went by quick as fuck. Top five hip-hop albums in your mind.
Before you start, Good Trouble, 8 songs I'm dropping on George Floyd's birthday. I'm going to send it to you early, though.
Good Trouble?
Yeah, this one's called Good Trouble.
Okay. Who? I know you got Trey on there.
It's just me on there.
Oh, all right.
Just
okay.
Me.
Okay.
Self-plug. That's why we got a show.
Top 5.
Yeah.
Right, either we can do we can either do albums or we can do artists.
Yeah, it's easy for me to do artists.
Okay, let's do artists.
And I really do have I got a top 7.
Okay, let me hear.
My top 7 is Jay-Z.
Number 1?
He probably means the most. Ghostface is my favorite rapper of all time. Mm. But Jay-Z is probably the most important rapper of all time to me, right? Then Scarface, Loveface, T.I., Jeezy, Killer Mike, and Nas. Mm. That's my top 7 that I can go listen to any of their albums at any given time and be content.
Who's yours?
My top 5 or 7?
Mm-hmm. What are the top 5 or 7?
I'm going Pac, Jay-Z, Face, Nas, Bun B.
Yeah, Bun Cole. Mm. Bun Cole. We forget about Bun only because he was part of a group. Like, if I name groups,
yeah,
I'm putting UGK. Okay. You know what I'm saying? But we forget about how cold Bun is, man.
Yeah. I got Pac. I got Big, I got Jay, I got Snoop, I got Nip.
I was about to say, you got as much you listen to Nip, bro. Yeah, you gotta put Nip in yours.
Yeah. I love Nip. I love Nip. Man, Nip, that legacy, that's what you call a stolen legacy, man.
So fast. Mm-hmm. My brother always puts me out of music. So when I was coming to LA in 2009, 10, he's like, you gotta listen to Nip. Same. Like you'll fuck with him. So I started listening to his shit and instantly fell in love. And then I came to the Lakers the next season. So I hit dude on a DM and he hit me right back. I was like, yo, new to the Lakers. You know, went to UCLA, came to a game and just hit it off with him.
Genuine
down to earth. Yep. And then I've seen him evolve from when he was riding around to little shows and I'd be following him to shows and we'd be upstairs. I'd be with a bunch of 60s upstairs on the Lakers smoking weed. Mm-hmm. Like, is that Matt Barnes from the Lakers back there smoking with, you know what I mean? So to be able to see his elevation from when I learned him on him in 09 to what he left us with, like you said, that was a star shot down early.
I'm saying with my homegirl Debbie Brown, she was doing radio in LA on K-Day. So when I used to go out there, she used to put me on all the new rappers. So it was Kendrick, it was Nipsey, it was Glasses Malone, Bishop Lamont. And I remember hearing that Bullets Ain't Got No Name. I was like, God.
Cole, right?
Damn.
But his evolution, too, the content in which he rapped it, and he rapped about his evolvement, too, and his evolution.
Absolutely. Shit was. You heard it through every project. Man. Crenshaw, Mailbox Money, up until Victory Lap. Mm-hmm. And that was what's
to think about, that was his first album, though.
Yes.
Victory Lap was his first. I mean, he has, if you know his history, he's got his history, but that was just that was number one.
And it was called Victory Lap.
It's crazy.
Like, think about that. Your first debut album on a major label, which ends up being your last album, is called Victory Lap. Like, it's almost like some foreshadowing. Mm, like,
some Pac shit.
Like, man, yo. He said that. He said he's Tupac his generation. Mm-hmm.
We got to ask him a question that we forget to ask our guests. So who do you think should be on our show next? But when you answer that question, it got to be somebody that you can help us get on here.
Oh, this motherfucker know everybody, too.
I know. He said Jay-Z. That's what I said.
Jay-Z on All the Smoke Will Be Fire.
That'd be dope.
I want to see Shaq on here for some reason.
I just tapped in with Shaq. Shaq, you've been motherfucking Hollywoodness, bro. We hit you last year. You said you was coming. Then Jack hit you and you said you was coming. Then you disappeared and started doing all these motherfucking commercials.
Yeah.
I just talked to him last week, though. He gave me his new number. He said it's on. He said as soon as the playoffs are over, playoffs are about to be over, Shaq.
Man, we know you got to go to all these banks and make all these deposits because you're getting all this money. But, you know, just make a little time for us, man.
You know why I want to see Shaq on here? Because Shaq got some real nigga he's suppressing.
Oh, man.
But it's only because
it's with his lane. What is he in?
Yeah. But I think if he get around y'all, we'll.
He let it out to me on text messages all the time. Yeah. Trust me.
He let it out. Okay. Yo, he was one of the craziest team. I can't wait to talk about, man, the shit he used to do in the locker room. If he talks about it, it's going to blow people away. That motherfucker was a 7'2", 360-pound kid.
Yeah, like a comedian.
Funny as a motherfucker.
But see, anyway, that's the inside info that y'all have that other people don't have.
Right. Like,
he was in the locker room with Shaq.
Doing shit.
So the conversations are different. That's why, even if you watch a show like Drink Champs with Nori, right, the reason Nori can talk to these guys the way he does
is
he was
there
on the roll with them. He was inside information. Yeah. Like,
that's what AI was saying with us, because we've been there. We felt every emotion. We've been, you know what I mean? So I like that, Shaq.
Good
5 dinner guests. Dead or alive?
Oh, man. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Martin Luther King Jr., Pop, Nip, and who? Maya Angelou.
Ooh. Considering the climate we're in right now, one book you would recommend for people to read?
Well, for black people or just in general? I tell everybody, man, you got to, if you've never read A Message to the Black Man by Elijah Muhammad, that's an amazing book for every black man on this planet to read. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because there's so many different life lessons that we can apply to what's going on now, from politics to diet to, you know, mental health, mindfulness, everything. It's like the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was 80 years ahead of everybody when he wrote that book.
On the flip side, people who are trying to align with us, a book you would recommend for them to read or understand us?
Honestly, to understand us, man, I think the autobiography of Malcolm X. And the reason I say the autobiography of Malcolm X is because you see what happens when a black man is put in a certain environment, right? But you also see what happens when a black person is provided opportunity. Because I always say the greatest book about growth and evolution that I've ever read in my life is the autobiography of Malcolm X. Malcolm Little going to Malcolm X. And I think that's what one thing people don't understand about the Nation of Islam. They provide that opportunity for black people that America's not. You know what I'm saying? They provide those tools and those resources for black people that America's not. And that's how you can get a Malcolm Little to turn into a Malcolm X. That's how you can get a Cassius Clay to turn into a Muhammad Ali. You know what I mean? So it's just like, I think that if white people read that book, they would understand that, you know, black people aren't inherently evil. You know what I mean? This system put us in a fucked up position. And in order for this system to really atone for its sins, it's got to provide things for us to get us out this fucked up position. And since we know that's not going to happen, we're going to have to do it ourselves.
Straight up. Last question. Who is your one figure you look up to?
Dead or alive?
A lot.
Oh, that's Jay-Z. For sure. Definitely.
Who's yours?
Good question. Explain yours, and then I'll give you mine.
Jay-Z for me, because, and you're so crazy, when I first listened to Jay-Z, I didn't like Jay-Z. Only because, like, you know, I come from the South. I was into, like, the gritty, grimy stuff. So it was just like, yo, this dude was talking about so much money and all that big willy talk. It was like, I don't want to hear that. But the reason I look up to him is because it's just like watching his evolution from coming in the game as a rapper, entrepreneur, but the things he used to talk about to always, when I say always showing us where he's at in his life. If you listen to every Jay-Z album, you could tell exactly where he was at in his life. He went from the player who was kicking girls out at 6 in the morning to now being the husband, family man, going to therapy. And if you've ever had the pleasure of just being up at Roc Nation, it's just like that's what you would want your company to look like. It's his family, and it's his longtime friends.
The blueprint.
Yeah, he's really like the blueprint, you know, and the way he just quietly shows up for his people all the time. Like, and has been doing it for years.
Right.
We just getting hip to all of the things that he's done. But it's just like, when I look at him, he's just a good representation of what I think a black man is. Like, you know, you're dealt the worst hand. You make the best of that hand you were dealt. Become a billionaire, but you take your people with you every step of the way. The people that are willing to grow with you, though.
Right.
The ones that aren't willing to grow with you.
It
ain't meant for everybody. But the ones that are willing to grow with you and that's supposed to be there, they still with you. And he represents that to me.
Jack, to answer your question, I guess I look at it different. You know, to be able to play, as long as I play in the NBA, my transition into this space, there's people I look up to. So he's one of them. Stephen A. Smith is one of them. Michael Strahan, who is, to me, the ultimate, because he was able to cross from professional athlete to sports, but then to mainstream media, too. And that's what I really want to do. Like, I love sports, but I want to transition into, like, real life. And then Kevin Frazier.
Kevin, right.
Kevin is dope. Kevin's helped me in this space.
You told me one. I didn't know I could name more.
Yeah. Well, Jack surprised me. I wasn't ready for my own question. Who's yours?
I think the only person I look up to is my little brother. For the simple fact that I wanted to be that guy that dated one woman through high school, had kids by working, one family, doing everything the right way. I got kids all over the place.
Yes, you do.
You know what I'm saying? So
that's only because you're allergic to condoms, so that's not really your fault.
That's not what it was. That's not what it was. But seriously, though, nah, I honestly look up to my little brother because he's done everything the right way. Obviously, he wanted my life. He wanted to play basketball, but it didn't work out for him. But his life and the way the man he is and how he takes care of our whole family. When anybody call, he there for him. That's the man I really want to
shout
be.
Shout out to Snap Marley.
Yeah, shout out to Snap Marley.
He got some twins, too. They're the same age as my
twins,
right?
Yeah, he got twins and a junior. Yep. Yeah,
that's
yeah.
crazy you say that about, because it's guys that I've, and I'm totally faithful to my wife now. I've been faithful for 4 years, since October 2016. But
how long you been with her?
22 years. But that don't,
I like it, though, man. It's a change. You got to start somewhere.
You know what I mean?
You gave us a date.
What Jack said is real. It's like, yo, we do look up to these guys that are faithful to their women.
Yeah.
Early on, you know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't have that kind of discipline.
Well, because you know how tough it is. You know how tough it is. Like, I admire anybody that could, because I've never been perfect when it comes to that. That's a hard.
Did he have options though? Huh? That's another good. Did you?
Well, I just think he understood what he wanted with his life at a young age. You know what I'm saying? Like seeing my grandmother, my grandfather, being together for so long. You know what I'm saying? My mom. You know, she really just dedicated our life to us. It's certain things that triggered him to do things the right way. He was around me. He seen me doing all that stuff. He seen women around me. He was just so focused on doing things the right way. And that's what I wanted, but I was distracted by other shit.
I didn't want to do my household the way my father, and I love my pops, you know what I'm saying? But I didn't want to do my household the way I saw him do his household.
Same here.
You know what I'm saying? Like, he got caught with his dick in the dirt. He's still with the same woman, so clearly that was meant to be, right?
Right.
But him and my mom got divorced, and that kind of, like, to me, messed the family up, right? So I didn't want to do that in my house.
Right.
You know?
I can dig it.
Right.
Well, that's a wrap. Charlamagne, man, we appreciate your time. Matt, thank you. Bro, great man. Show.
They've been waiting on this.
Yeah, great show. They've been waiting on this, bye, man.
Nah, thank you for having me.
That's a wrap. All the Smoke. You can find this on Showtime, Basketball, YouTube, and the iHeart Family Black Effects.
Yes. And All the Smoke Network coming soon.
Coming soon.
Fuck it, heard it.
You bitch you.
You bitch you. Shout out Snoop.
This is All the Smoke, a production of The Black Effect and iHeartRadio in partnership with Showtime.